and found himself in his office in Ilium staring into his optometer, which was in the shape of an owl, a jade-green mechanical owl hanging from a steel rod. He had fallen asleep while examining a female patient. He had done this before. He was starting to get worried about it. He couldn't remember how old he was, or what year it was.
Doctor?
Yeah?
You're so quiet.
I'm sorry.
You were talking away there, and then you got so quiet. You see something terrible.
Terrible?
Something terrible in my eyes.
No. Your eyes are fine. You just need glasses for reading. If you'd like to go across the corridor, please.
When she was gone, Billy opened the drapes. Bright sunlight came crashing in. There were thousands of parked automobiles in the suburban shopping center. Billy's own Cadillac Eldorado Coupe de Ville was out there. He read the sticker on the bumper. Impeach Earl Warren. The sticker had been given to Billy by his father-in-law, a member of the John Birch Society. The date on the license plate was 1967. That would make Billy 44 years old.
Where have all the years gone? What the hell?
The sirens scared the hell out of him. He was expecting World War III at any time. It was the siren in the firehouse opposite announcing noon. He closed his eyes, and when he opened them again, he was back in World War II and a German soldier was kicking his feet.
Stehen Sie auf, Americans! Time to move out! Stehen Sie auf!
The Americans, with Billy among them, formed a fool's parade on the road outside. There was a photographer, a German with a Leica. He took pictures of Roland Weary and Billy's feet, evidence of the miserable state of equipment of the American army. They threw Billy into a shrubbery and menaced him with machine pistols as if they were capturing him when he came out. Billy's smile when he came out was like the Mona Lisa's, for he was also riding in his Cadillac in 1967 on his way to a Lions Club luncheon meeting. The speaker at the meeting was a major in the Marines.
There is no choice, gentlemen. We have to keep fighting in Vietnam until we win, or until the Reds realize they can force their way of life on weaker peoples. Now, I've been there twice. I believe we must bomb the North into the Stone Age if they refuse to listen to reason.
Billy was not moved to protest, did not shudder about the hideous things he had seen bombing do. He was just having a Lions Club lunch. He had a framed prayer on his office wall. It helped a lot of patients. It went like this.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Among the things Billy Pilgrim could not change were the past, the present, and the future.
Major, can I present Mr. Billy Pilgrim? Mr. Pilgrim is a veteran, sir. He also has a son, a sergeant in the Green Berets, sir. In Vietnam, of course.
Oh, you should be proud, Pilgrim. Proud.
I am. I certainly am, sir.
Billy went home afterwards for a nap. The doctor hoped this would relieve a complaint that Billy had. Every so often, for no apparent reason, Billy would find himself weeping. He owned a lovely Georgian house in Ilium. He was as rich as Croesus. He went into his and his wife's bedroom. Billy looked out of the window. There was a crippled man down there. Another man on crutches was ringing the doorbell across the street. Billy knew they were selling subscriptions to magazines that would never come. He took off his trifocals and his coat, necktie and shoes, and he closed the blinds and lay down on the coverlet. But sleep would not come. Tears came instead. He was back in the war again. He was marching with the other prisoners. The winter wind was bringing tears to his eyes. At each intersection, Billy's group was joined by more Americans with their hands on top of their haloed heads. They were moving like water, downhill all the time. Through the valley flowed a Mississippi of humiliated Americans, tens of thousands. They sighed and groaned.